choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we break down the latest and possibly not so greatest from today's sci-fi television. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So, Chris, in watching these episodes, the more and more I watch stuff on Paramount Plus, the more and more I do not like the app.
Oh, no, I hate the app. It drives me crazy.
And the thing is, like, if I watch it on my computer, it runs pretty well. Mm-hmm. If I watch it on my phone, it runs pretty well. If I watch it on my LG Smart TV, which is the biggest screen I have, which is how I like to watch all my Trek and Star Wars and, you know, Marvel shows, mm-hmm. The app does not run fine. The audio will cut out every now and then. If I want to rewind something to, like, oh, I think I missed something, or oh, I just want to rewatch that or rehear it again, there's several times just watching these two episodes where I try to rewind just to make sure I didn't miss anything, or, you know, I was like, oh, did I really hear what I hear? And the app would crash and it would turn off my TV.
Oh, damn. I've never had any of those problems.
Yeah, I've had it where it was like loading problems if I tried to rewind. This is the first time where I've had app crashing problems where I try to rewind and keep, you know, maybe 30 seconds. And nope, shut down the whole app. Typically, we do different types of cold opens, but if our long-time listeners have been listening, you know.
We hate Paramount Plus.
We hate Paramount Plus, formerly known as CBS All Access. Mm-hmm. I do not like the app.
I mean, nothing really changed, except they just changed the name. They didn't do any upgrades. They didn't fix any of the bugs that are in the systems. I mean, the commercials are already annoying as hell to deal with, and then you already got to pay for it on top of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's not a good app.
No, and like I said, on my phone, because I have watched a couple episodes so far in Discovery on my phone or on my laptop, they've been pretty good. With the exception, you know, there's still times where ads will cut off a scene a couple, like, 10 seconds early, and you get that last part of the scene after the commercial. That happened on my computer and phone, too. But at least on my LG Smart TV, the app's garbage. And it's to the point where I don't even want to watch the episodes a lot on my big 65-inch TV.
Damn.
So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. I hope somebody, and maybe one day I'll write a tweet or a message to Paramount and be like, hey, fix the bugs in the freaking LG TVs.
Just fix the bugs, period. I mean, there's just so many problems with it. I mean, hell, I can't even swap.
There was one nice thing. I did watch The Masters on the Paramount Plus app. And that was pretty smooth. I couldn't complain. And that was through my TV. So watching live TV or watching golf in this case, it was fine. Trying to watch Discovery or Picard or any other show that's, you know, not live, not fine.
That's weird. I don't know. I was watching some of the older Star Trek movies. And with the older stuff, if it's not new, I guess they don't do the commercials on it, because I didn't have any commercials watching First Contact. I don't know. I had no problems with them whatsoever. Well, you know, when you're doing some of the archive stuff,
it's maybe just hit and miss. It's kind of irritating because it's like, you know,
I think it's safe to say
it should run flawlessly on these shows, because I'm watching Discovery for the first time and it's I won't say ruining my experience, but it's hindering my, it's putting a damper on my first time viewing experience.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't know. I think it's safe to say that Paramount Plus is by far the worst of any of the streaming sites. I don't know any other that could take the reins as the worst.
Yeah. And it's coming from, you know, me who owns most of them. I have Netflix, HBO, Max, Hulu,
Disney,
you know,
Plus.
Disney, almost the whole nine yards.
Hell, even the sci-fi app is better.
I haven't used that one, but yeah, there's
at least I don't have to pay for that.
Paramount Plus is definitely the worst, but we can stop bashing them, I guess would be a good way to put it. And we'll just go ahead and get in.
It's fun bashing.
We'll go ahead and get into these episodes.
There's just so much to bash. I mean.
Yeah. Well, we can bash the episodes.
All right. Well, might as well get started bashing the episodes. All right. So.
You can do it. You can do it all night long.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, man. Let's do it.
I mean, come on. I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm going to go do it.
What do we got in store for today?
Well, on today's episode of Deep Space High, we will be going over episode 7, The Unification, and episode 8, The Sanctuary. We'll start off with The Unification. Now, The Unification, I was more intrigued and I liked a hell of a lot more than The Sanctuary. Episode 7, it gets off to an interesting start. You know, you find out more about Vulcan, which is now called Navar. I almost said Navir, and I was like, it's Navar.
Navar.
I gotta pay attention to my notes and stop drinking so much. I have done some
pre-game before the...
Yeah, more drinking than I normally do before we record, so...
See, that's funny, and I'm more sober than what I normally am. But then again, it's been a long day. I've had a lot of cleaning and work to do, so I haven't had the chance to smoke.
Yeah, well...
So it's nice to know the rules are a little reversed this episode.
It is a little reversed, but you learn a little bit more about Navar, that the Romulans and the Vulcans ended up unifying again thanks to Spock and the groundwork he laid in The Next Generation. So there was a lot of fun Easter eggs in this episode, especially with hitting TNG and Spock and even Picard with the Quinlamana. Yeah. Quinlamana.
What?
The Quinlamana. Quinlot. You know, the...
Kwat Milot.
Yeah, the Kwat Milot. The organization, the Vulcan, or the Romulan organization that one guy was a part of.
The extremist ones.
Yeah, the ones who absolute candor and take on lost causes or whatever.
Yeah, I know which one. I think I know
it. Yeah, Kwat Milot. So there's a lot of Easter eggs seeing that here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what'd you think of the reunification between the Romulans and the Vulcans?
I was glad actually, you know, because that was something that Spock often talked about, especially in The Next Generation. They showed a clip of Spock from Admiral Picard's records, and it was the scene from, I'm trying to remember the name of the two-parter. It was a two-part episode where Spock was featured. Data and Picard went to Romulus to look for Spock because the Federation thought he had defected. I don't remember the name of the episodes, but I do remember that.
But it was like late. It was like season 6 or season 7.
Yeah, it was one of the later seasons. I do remember that it was one of the most popular episodes of Star Trek history, like ever. And I'm really glad that, you know, Spock succeeded, and I am kind of glad that they went in that direction. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's great, because, you know, and I would like them to explore a bit of the lost history between the two cultures, because they started talking about it in that Next Generation episode, where Spock was even talking about the kids who would bring up some ancient Romulan or Vulcan toys that used to show common ancestries, and you would kind of see a little bit of the exploration of the two cultures and how they're related. I was kind of hoping they would continue to go into it, but it was interesting to see that was the direction that they went into. And I think that maybe Picard is going to be a bit of that. How did we get from there to here to there?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think Picard is too close to the TNG timeline, and they were saying that it was, you know, centuries after his death when the reunification took place, so it would have to be somewhere in, like, the 27th, 28th century when the reunification takes place, and there's not a current series that takes place in that timeline.
Yeah.
So if they explore it more, it'll have to be on Discovery or a new show.
And that's where I feel bad for the Star Trek writers, or I should say the director. I don't want to say the directors. I don't know who I would feel bad for, but the people who are doing Star Trek, there's just so much untapped potential that they could, you know, they could go with. so many different storylines, so many different things that they could explore. They could explore this Romulan unification. They could go back and explain.
That would be a good series or a mini series. Just
seeing,
and even maybe starting off with some archive footage from that TNG, and just it would be a show or a mini series that takes place. You know, all the major events of the Romulan Vulcan unification, because the show would have to take place over centuries, so you would have a revolving cast. But I could definitely see a season of that just to get a good story of it.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's so much untapped potential that Star Trek could go into. They could go into hell. They could go back in time to World War III, the eugenics wars. They could explain Khan. You know, they could continue with the Romulan Star, the war with the Romulan Star Empire that took place after Enterprise, and that kind of started the introduction of the neutral zone. Because
there's a lot there that they can go into, and maybe one day they'll get their shit together and do it. But
I don't think they will.
I don't see it happening in the near future.
I think that somebody's gonna have. I think when Star Trek changes hands again, almost like how Disney acquired it from LucasArts. And then
Star Wars. That was Star Wars.
Yes, Star Wars from LucasArts, and they kind of revived the franchise. I think once it changes hands from Viacom to whoever would be new in ownership, I think that's when we would get more of that exploration. You know, I think we'd need some fresh blood into it. It
might not be the sale of the property, but maybe new leadership. But
right,
I digress. We'll talk more about this episode. You know, this was a fast. It felt more like a Star Trek episode with, you know, Brenham trying to get this SB-19 data, which was a Vulcan experiment to come up with an alternative power source, you know, rather than dilithium warp travel, maybe a different power source. And what SB-19 was, it almost seemed like a wormhole, that they would create a wormhole and, you know, kind of teleport like spore drive-esque technology to replace dilithium in. And there was some success in that project, but there was also some concerns the Vulcans brought up, and they wanted to cease operations on it and cease the research. But the Federation pushed them to keep going, and which ultimately the burn occurred, which, according to their data, led them to believe that the Vulcans/Romulans
were the ones responsible caused the burn. And they blamed the Federation, because the Federation was the one that pushed them into the research when they weren't for it, and they were responsible for the ending of space travel.
Yeah, I liked how the Navarre El Presidente, or La Presidente, said she's female. Spanish is weird.
Yeah.
At least for English speakers. La Presidente, she said it best, that Federation went from an organization who went to... You know, they were more focused on the needs of the many, and that ended up costing the Federation.
Yeah, I remember that. That was interesting, because she even, Saru even kind of said, but isn't that your own ancient proverb, that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few? She's like, yes, but we have moved beyond the
ways of the proverbs. Yeah.
Right.
And I thought that was, there was some great dialogue between her and Saru. I liked...
Oh yeah,
you know, the scenes where they were interacting, you can see her frustration, especially when Brenham called to call Nakat, and you know, which was an ancient Vulcan way for scientific discovery. Someone would go and argue their logistical point on a scientific premise or whatever, and to a committee, and the committee would rule whether it was worth exploring or not worth exploring, or whether in this case, whether the data, giving up the data and giving it to the Federation, was worth the risk of the Federation exploiting the data and continuing the research.
Well, it was funny. It was interesting. Going back to that conversation that they had, the reason why they were talking about that the Federation had become so consumed with the needs of the many was because it had expanded so vastly and was... You know, the Federation had encompassed so many different worlds, and its territory was stretched so much that they were actually running out of dilithium just to meet the demand of the number of ships to maintain the Federation. So it's almost like us running out of
empire
oil.
Almost like any empire in history. The Romulan Empire got too big for its britches. The Ottoman Empire got too big for its britches.
Rome, Greece, any major empire.
Damn, who am I thinking of? The Mongolian Empire, the Genghis Khan's empire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all great empires.
They stretched themselves too thin and they couldn't hold the empire. It ended up collapsing. So mm-hmm. it's kind of what it seemed like. Not that the Federation was an empire, but
it's still the similar, same concept. Similar. Apply.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What'd you think of the T'Kal Nakat? I feel like that should be a screen grab because I go and I look at my notes and I make sure I say it right. So I'm talking one way. And then when I try to pronounce these words I'm unfamiliar with, I'm like, so what do you think of the T'Kal Nakat? Okay, yeah, T'Kal. But what'd you think of those scenes, especially when, you know, I was going to say spoiler alert, but you should have seen everyone should have seen the episodes already. Especially with Brenham's mom being a member of the Kuat-Minla.
Yeah, I figured
being her advocate and being the advocate for her during this T'Kal Nakat.
Well, let's start with the T'Kal Nakat. I was kind of hoping for a little bit more OG series weird Vulcan rituals, kind of.
Yeah, weird Vulcan ritual mixed with Picard lawyer ish.
Yeah,
style, but
exactly.
We didn't get that.
No, we really didn't.
It was more of like a
stand in a room, convince me why I should listen to you or not.
Yeah, it felt more like a Law and Order drama versus a
not even a Picard, good one either.
Yeah, like one of the bad episodes of Law and Order.
Yeah.
Which after, nah, never mind, we'll go there. After, I was going to say 20 some odd seasons.
I don't know. It's almost like Law and Order met the episode of TNG where Beverly banged the ghost. You know, just that level of, just.
That was bad. Yeah, that was a bad episode. That was bad.
So.
Anyway, really, so what did you think? So you didn't care for the hearing?
No, not really. I mean, it was. I was surprised that that's the direction that they went with, you know, her mom, that her mom went to Vulcan and, with, you know, that's mm-hmm. kind of where she ended up. And they didn't really explore how she got there, just that she was there. And
there was like a brief scene because Brenham said, did you go back to Terra Elysium, I think? And she was like, no, I ended up here and then got, you know, that was brutal, got rescued and then was dropped on the door of the Kuat-Minla. It was like a quick 10-second dialogue explanation, and I was like, really, you couldn't give us more? You couldn't,
yeah,
you know.
And it was just like 30
seconds. It was like, hey, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and Brenham, how are you doing? And then that's pretty much how it went. It was,
yeah,
ridiculous.
I don't know, the only interesting part was when the mom kind of stabbed her in the back of. Yeah, but kind of came out of threw a curveball at Brenham, to mm-hmm. use a sports analogy. Sorry, no sci-fi analogy for you there. But it was just,
that argument there, it felt off. It felt out of place, but it felt not out of place at the same time. Ooh, it was like,
but hey, there is something that I did notice. So you might not have noticed this, but on that council, there was two Vulcans and a Romulan, mm-hmm. and the guy on the left was a Romulan. That mm-hmm. is actually a... I don't know his name, but he was a reoccurring actor on The Next Generation, and he would play many Romulans, including a Admiral. Oh, fuck, he was a defector in one of the episodes.
Yeah, I do know. Yeah, he did look familiar. And, yeah, I did recognize him. It wasn't from TNG. I don't know if I recognize him from elsewhere, but
he might have done other roles. But that's the same actor. He was. I'm glad. I really am happy that they brought him back. I hope they do that for a lot of the other actors, because a lot of the same actors would come back and play different roles. For example, mm-hmm. Marshall's mother from How I Met Your Mother. She was mm-hmm. a very reoccurring character in The Next Generation. She's Worf's baby.
Yeah, she Worf's baby mama, and I think she was something else. Oh, she did it like two or three times.
She played several. She was also doctor, one of the doctors on The Next Generation. She played a Vulcan doctor, Sorak, mm-hmm. I think. She played several characters. I know that.
It's one of those cool seeing some of those old reoccurring episodes actors.
Yeah, Wei-Yun, I think, was in Discovery as well. The actor who plays him, he's been in he's been in every Star Trek series, I think, besides the OG series. So.
Yeah, the whole hearing scene was odd because when Brenham and Imran are talking, they said the Vulcan leader, the young Vulcan leader, was the followed logic, and then when you get into the hearing, he does not really follow logic, and you see the Romulan and the lady who looks more like a half Romulan, half Vulcan, versus full Vulcan. You know, the leader wants to dismiss the hearing or whatever, and the other two are like, no. One's on the fence, and the Romulan is like, yeah, I think we should give her the data. We should try to figure it out, the problem. If we didn't cause it, we should know that and, you know, try to heal or whatever. But the young Vulcan leader was not having any of it, and that was surprising, and it caught Brenham off guard, and which kind of led into that argument that they had in front of everyone between her and her mother.
Yeah, and then she ends up, I don't know, I guess trying to preserve the peace between the Romulans and the Vulcans, was like, okay, then I formally withdraw my offer.
Yeah, because it got heated between the three members of the committee. And it was to the point where the Romulan was going to go and give them the data anyways behind the other two people's back. And that would have caused more division, which Brenham saw and ended up withdrawing her offer because of it. Yeah. Her request because of it.
I don't know. I mean, it makes sense that there's still a lot of problems with the integration of the two. Mm-hmm. I would really like for them to continue to explore this storyline, the reunification, because how would you go about that? You know, two species which diverged thousands of years ago.
They're the same species. The animal even said that.
Yes. Well, they were from they were originally from the same species, but they both went their separate ways somehow, to where the Romulans did their own thing, the Vulcans did their own thing, and now they're doing a reunification. But how do you come back together after thousands of years of being separated?
That's what they need a miniseries on.
Oh, I think you need more than a miniseries.
You need some sort of series to go through the reunification process. But
we're not going to get that. Well, the whole thing was at least 3,000 years ago. So we're 1,000 years from when the Vulcans first contact. Because it was 2063, Vulcan first contact, and we're in the 31st century. Mm-hmm. So, and then I think there was 1,000 years prior to that is when the Vulcans discovered warp drive, because it took them 1,000 years to get from warp 1 to warp 2, believe it or not. And then it took another 1,000 years was the era of Serac, who was their Jesus, their Messiah, the one who brought logic to the Vulcans. And they said that for centuries prior to that they were savages and brutes with emotions and feelings no different than the humans.
Yeah, so they just really learned to suppress their feelings, not really that they don't have emotions, they just suppress them.
So, you know, my curiosity is, how long lived is the Vulcan species? Like, humans have been predominant for only a couple thousand years, and we haven't had much technological progress. You know, what's the Vulcan story? You know, when exactly did they reach the technological capabilities to separate on their own species? Or were Vulcans abducted and they brought, you know, aliens brought them to a different planet and they
formed their own species? Like,
I know, it's like weird.
Sci-fi conspiracy type show that's fictional.
But I mean, it's like, it's
they
like,
were abducted by other aliens. The Andorians actually inducted them. And
you'd be surprised. I just watched an episode of the original series where they were sent to do a mission, and what they did was they kidnapped the members of the species thousands of years ago and raised them and bred them to fulfill a specific mission. I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. I'm just curious, like, how exactly they split to, what's the story behind it? You know,
there needs to be a story behind it, which I kept saying in the reunification in that show, which there's not going to be a show.
They need a show.
But that's where you can explain it all. And I don't think you're really going to get that in any other show. You might get it in some other, you know, some other show. You might get a history of it, of, you know, maybe how they split, but not necessarily the reunification.
See, and I think this is where I think we need, in the Star Trek community, better writers. because this is where Star Wars does really well, the novelizations. You know, they get books of the movies, they get novelizations of different storylines, of different time eras. You know, they do a really good job at exploring different storylines with the books. But Star Trek doesn't have that. We don't really have any good authors or really any whatsoever. And we don't really go and explore the different timelines. We just kind of explore the same old stuff that we always do. You know, what if Kirk met Picard and, you know, the original Enterprise met the Enterprise D? Or let's talk about Janeway. Let's talk about, you know, it's just going over the same stuff that we all already know rather than any new material or exploring the universe. So, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, here's a question I want to bring up to you going back towards the episode. How did you feel about Saru asking Tilly to be the acting first officer?
I liked it. I think it was, she gave good advice. I mean, she knows what she needs officer, to do.
I mean,
it was kind of a big ask, but...
kind of.
It was
a huge ask.
But I think she can do it.
Just in case anyone didn't hear me right. I have been drinking a little bit.
She probably does have a big ass. I don't know. I never actually looked.
Hey, back to the question.
Fuck. What was the question?
How'd you feel about Tilly being asked to be the XO?
Oh, right. I don't know. I kind of liked it. You know, I think she can do the role. I think she'll fill the role well. And when watching her from episode 7 and episode 8, where she really kind of takes the job, she seems like she's doing a pretty good job. I think, you know, I've often said that Tilly's the highlight of the show, in my opinion. And I think that giving her a more prominent role in a more prominent position is a step in the right direction. And it might not work out, but I like it so far.
I mean, here's the thing. You have a chain of command on a ship, even, you know, in Starfleet. So say, for example, when we've seen multiple times when Saru and Brenham went out on the bridge, who was the first person to get the con? That should be your acting XO, because that would technically make them second in line or third in command. And, you know, I know it's kind of a gray area because you probably have head of security, head of whatever, head of engineering.
Yeah,
so any one of those people could really be the XO, but I mean, we're talking bridge crew here, so I think someone on the bridge and someone who's more familiar with the bridge crew and the command should be...
True, but...
I mean, even if it's acting first officer.
Well, I mean, Tilly is acting first officer.
Now, but she wasn't even a bridge officer prior to acting first officer.
But here's the thing. The chain of command structure for the ship has been a mess the entire time. You know, Saru... just became the captain, and originally they were going to have Burnham do the first officer position, but she kind of blew it. They don't really have a chief security because she's gone, because it was what's her name
gone.
The chief engineer I don't think Stemmons really wants.
I don't even know who the chief engineer is.
I don't even know it. I don't know if Stemmons is the chief engineer.
I don't know. I don't really hear it. But here's the thing. So
they don't really have that.
Pre-Arium dying, Arium almost seemed like she was the go-to whenever the XO and the captain were not on the bridge. And the blonde girl, who we haven't really seen much of, kind of replaced Arium. So maybe it's Arium. Maybe it's... oh, God. I can't think of their names. Maybe it's the Asian bridge officer guy, or maybe it's the black bridge officer guy. One of those guys... Or the blonde girl. It really seems like any three of them should be the first officer, and just based off a chain of command. You know, Tilly having not even going through the command training program. Yeah, she's shown some strong leadership abilities, and you know she's proven herself in multiple occasions. That doesn't mean she's XO material yet. She's probably almost, not to go back to more sports references, but it's almost trying to pull a major or a high school draft pick out of the MLB draft and throw them straight into the majors when they need some more time to develop in the minor leagues. There's a lot of potential, but you know, it's not like you're getting this all, you know, not to jump to basketball, not like you're getting LeBron James, who's ready to make that transition. You're getting more of a someone who needs some more time to develop and grow confidence and gain experience in the minor leagues before getting to go up to the big leagues. That's just how I feel about it.
I don't know. I mean, she seems like she's pretty experienced. She's more just as experienced as any other member of that crew.
I'll put it to you this way. She hasn't even been an ensign that long. She was a cadet the entire first season or most of the first season.
True, but what has Tilly not been through that everybody else has?
She has been through a lot, but that whole crew has been through a lot. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't like it. I didn't like it. I mean, I like Tilly, and I've liked her character. It didn't feel fitting, even though you seem to disagree and the crew on the Discovery seem to disagree.
Well, honestly, I just don't think that there's any other person that would be best for the position. You know, Brenna would have been the obvious choice.
We're talking about an acting position, too. It's not like she's going to fill the role permanently. Mm-hmm. I mean, who says someone who doesn't have more command experience, someone who is a commander or a lieutenant, might have a better, not even a better understanding, just as a temporary position.
I don't know.
And try to make Tilly an acting, I'll probably blow my lid and be like, this is ridiculous.
What do you mean?
So if they, you know, because right now she's an acting XO, they try to make her a permanent XO, then I'm definitely going to blow my lid. I'm already blowing my lid that she's even the acting XO.
I don't know. Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see how she does. Because, you know, in episode 8, you see her really take authority and kind of take charge at the position and do it well. It might be suited for her. She might be a great position for it. Mm-hmm. I say let's just kind of wait and see. Because honestly, okay, I kind of like the idea of Tilly as first officer better than I like Burnham. So, I don't know. I think patience should be called for on this episode. We still have, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 4 more episodes left. So, yeah, we could see what happens and see how she does. But in the very small sample size, I think she's doing fine.
I disagree. Anyways, we'll move on. I mean, episode 7? Yeah, 7. Burnham does end up getting the SB data because the president is impressed and ends up trusting her at the end of that botched request, trial, whatever that to call Niket.
That's why you keep looking back at the notes to read it, because you can't pronounce it to save your life.
No, I can't. And I try to spell things the way that I would have to read them. It's not necessarily even the correct spelling. That's just how I think it would be spelled based on the way they're saying it to help me reference it. So, but anyway, she ends up getting the data and it becomes beneficial because Demons gets on it and they end up finding out in episode 9. Here's our transition to, episode 8, The Sanctuary, not 9.
Last episode. I kept saying 7 instead of 6.
Yeah, so in episode 8, they find out that the point of origin based on the SB-19 and the data from, I think it said the 3 black boxes, that the point of origin for whatever caused the burn took place in a nebula. And they said the name of the nebula. I couldn't catch it even in my 2 viewings. I didn't jot it down because I didn't take notes while I was watching this episode either time. So it did start from a nebula, and you find out that there's actually a distress signal coming from within the nebula. That could be why we heard the musical tune that we seen so far throughout the season being played by multiple people. The first, you know, by Adira's boyfriend, and the second time on the seed ship with the mother humming it or whatever. So,
right,
it could be why multiple people know it across multiple light years. God, I'm struggling.
It's all right. I've done it plenty of times throughout our episodes. But yeah.
This episode was a Jonathan Frakes directed episode. Second time he's directed an episode this season.
Was it? Oh, episode 6 or episode 7?
7, The Sanctuary. But I didn't care for it. I mean, it was directed well, but I think the actors did what they could with the script they had, and Frakes did what he could with the script he had. And it all comes down to, I didn't care for this episode too much. Because we're introduced to Osira, the big bad Orion Emerald Chain leader.
Right.
And I wasn't impressed. It looked like an Orion that was on a lot of Botox. like her head was shinier than a lot of polished cars.
Oh my gosh.
That's just what I thought when I was watching it. That's what I mean, not just her not cousin, her nephew looked the same. I mean, all the Orions in this series so far have just looked like, instead of humanoids painting green, they look like humanoids, green humanoids with a lot of Botox. Like, you know, you could look at yourself in their skin, shiny.
Yeah, I noticed that myself. I don't know. I don't know. It was weird.
Species evolves. It's 900 years later, but still.
Yeah, I just think that they messed up the makeup and maybe just had too much.
I don't think they messed it up. I think they did it intentionally. But
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe thinking we wouldn't notice, and guess what? I noticed.
Yeah. Wasn't that the same creature that she threw the nephew into that Book had on a ship that killed the nephew?
They were both worm-like. I think it was the same species. I'm not 100% sure. It was like a trance worm or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember if that's what Book was transporting in episode 1, 3, somewhere in there. Not one. I think it was one of the season.
Yeah, but I mean... I don't know. I'm kind of with you to where I didn't really care for the episode either. She didn't seem like that big bad of a threat, and I feel like that's kind of...
It's like they tried to make her menacing, but it didn't translate when it was shot and edited and put on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would concur. Goddamn, what's the name of the group? I can't remember the name. Well, I'm thinking of... It's not related to Discovery. There was a group in Star Trek Voyager. They were a lesser civilization, kind of tribal, that was always more of a nuisance to Voyager. And I'm kind of thinking, is this what they're going to do? Not have this syndicate as the main villain, but kind of as annoyance that they're going to maintain throughout the rest of, you know, this season and next season. Kind of a supplemental storyline from the main one.
From what I can tell, she's supposed to be the main villain in this series. And that's reading some articles based on the episode and stuff like that. She's supposed to be the big baddie of the season. So
she doesn't seem like that good of a big baddie.
No, I think the guy from the first episode, the second episode, the one who plays...
the nephew?
I don't remember his name, but the one who is the median's husband in that old show from way back when.
Right.
Who they sent off to go and as Dawn was hitting, they're like, I'll never survive, that guy.
Yes.
I feel like they set him up to be a better baddie than this Osaya chick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. It's just, damn, it's been a while since we watched these first couple episodes, so.
Couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't think of his name. I don't have it up. I didn't think to make that reference until now when we were conversating about it. So,
right.
But I mean, not really a lot happens. This episode, plot wise, it was Book getting a message from his brother, Akeem, to go home to Quajon. And we get a little bit of history on Book and his home planet of Bajon and how they were kind of flourishing, and then the sea locust kind of came in once the tides rose and destroyed a lot of their crops and harvests, and famine took over and all this fun stuff. So that's kind of what we're seeing in this episode, because what ended up happening was Osira came in and offered a temporary solution and offered food, a little bit of food, and enough assistance to keep the Quajorians, I don't know if that's their name, but the people there needing their help and you know, requesting them to intervene whenever necessary.
Yeah, I mean, this was all to get what's his name back, right? The Andorian Reef.
Yeah, well, no, it was actually, they explained it when Osira and Akeem were talking, Brooke's, you know, quote unquote brother, mm-hmm. She actually wanted Brooke, and that was before she realized when the Discovery came in to a quote unquote observe with Reen on board. That's kind of when the plans changed, because Akeem's mission was to get Brooke back to the planet, or Brooke back to the planet, so Osira can get him. Not realizing that Reen was on board the Discovery, and that's kind of when the plans changed, and she wanted him.
And see, I thought that it was they lured Book over because Book was the one that rescued him or kind of broke him out.
No, I think she wanted him, probably thinking he knew his whereabouts. But now that she scanned the Discovery when she dropped out of warp, now that they're not worried about it.
Yeah, and then he just so happened to be along with them as they came.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I mean,
that was pretty much storyline A, was just that resolution, because there's some tension between Book and his brother. You know, what's her face? Brenham's kind of just there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's any actual relevant storylines other than that. You got the Georgia storyline.
The Georgia storyline, where she says she is dying, but that's when Colbert was like, yeah, it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah, it seems like she's just repressing some memories, and I have a feeling it's going to have to do with her mother.
No, I kind of think it's partly that, and partly because the mirror universe is further apart. I think I mentioned this last episode, the mirror universe being further apart from this universe.
Yeah, they're drifting apart.
That it's kind of tearing her apart, because she's technically not supposed to be in that universe, so it's destroying her.
Could be. And that would be an explanation that makes sense, but
kind of like
you have to explain the science behind that, though.
So I'll put it to you this way: in the DC universe, in the Arrowverse, whenever they would jump planets, they would say, I think it was this universe, but I think they would say that because in the multiverse, the different planets would vibrate at a different frequency, the people of that planet would vibrate at a different frequency, and if you were away from that planet for too long, it would kind of slowly drive you mad or kill you, because you're technically not on the same frequency of your original Earth. So it could be that situation where they were close together, so it wasn't a problem. But as the Earths are further apart in frequency, now it's tearing Giorgio apart.
Could be. That would be okay. I mean, that's a believable explanation.
A solid theory. Let's see if they pseudoscience that one into an explanation. I think they will. I'm fairly confident on it. That's me saying, because I actually don't know, but that.
I mean, that's definitely a plausible explanation.
It makes logical sense, but I could see the show writers going the illogical way of that Vulcan leader who was supposed to be a logisticist, whatever.
I have no idea what you're
logistics. Follower or whatever. Not extremist, but logic follower. I can see them going the same route as him and abandoning his ways of logic and doing whatever the hell, you know, whatever shit sticks.
Okay.
So I'm trying to think. I mean, there was some interesting stuff that happens. We saw some space battles.
Yeah, you saw some space
because
battles.
Discovery was ordered not to intervene, but they find a workaround with a Detmer flying.
Yeah, it hit Bookship.
Bookship to kind of shoot up whatever her name is. I forgot. Osira's ship and cause them to jump out of there. But
yeah, I mean,
other than that, I didn't really care for the episode. Oh, here's something I wanted to bring up, and I thought it was weird, but interesting. When Tilly and Saru are talking, they're trying to come up with a catchphrase.
Oh, yeah.
That you can say kind of when they want to engage Spore Drive or execute his orders. And
yeah. I mean, every
that was an
got one.
Interesting and cringy little scene that they had there.
Yeah, well, I mean, every captain kind of has one, and it's all kind of different. So, I mean,
I was going to say, I know Kirk had... Yeah, Picard was engaged. We saw what was his face? Pikes was hit.
Pikes was hit.
I don't remember where Kirk's was.
I don't either. I don't know if
punch or
punch it.
Someone said punch it, but I think that was again Pike in the Kelvin movie universe.
Yeah. Well, I think Kirk also did it too. I don't know. I've never actually noticed for Kirk, so I'll go back and I'll, because I'm still rewatching it. I'm through the first two seasons and I'm on the third season now, so I'll keep an eye out.
What about Janeway? Did she have a phrase that she used?
More coffee.
Yeah, not what I meant. She's not like when she said, "Let's go to warp." Oh, let's get some more coffee. And then they jump to warp.
Well, yeah,
I've only seen a handful of episodes, so.
Well, she would say, "Don't talk to me until I've had my coffee," many times. So.
Well, that's very relatable.
Yes. Well.
But I mean, the episode is kind of lackluster, and
I don't know.
The most interesting part, in my opinion, not to keep cutting you off, but the sea locusts, they look like floating blue balls. You know, because they would kind of contract as they're breathing, so they, and then they would expand, and when they expanded, they look like floating testicles. They really did. They really look like, they look like blue balls.
I did not notice that at all. So.
Oh my god, go and watch it, and you will not be able to unsee it. Damn. Like, they look like legit blue balls. Watching it the first time, I paused on that scene, and I looked, and I was like, and I just busted out laughing because I was like, yeah, these look like blue testicles.
That's funny. Any woman who doesn't believe blue balls exist, just go watch this episode. It's proof of it.
I don't think.
Ugh. That's funny. I didn't notice that. I don't know. I guess I'll have to go back and take a look. I didn't.
Yeah, go back. Go back and take a look. Because it stuck out to me. It stuck out to me like blue balls. Like.
That's funny.
Laughing too hard over here.
Oh man,
I'm trying to think, how do they set up the episodes? How do they set up 9? I don't remember.
Well, they
because Osiris was just like, this isn't the end of us, and they warped off.
Yeah, I mean, wasn't it the end of it where they discovered where the signal was in the nebula? I think it was
I thought that was towards the beginning, and then Adira was supposed to
work on the algorithm.
Come up with an algorithm to decode the distress signal within the nebula, and there wasn't a resolution on that.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's the Adira storyline where she can't see her boyfriend anymore, and then she goes full PC, modern PC, and yep, says that full she's non-binary. Which, I mean, I heard about.
Which the actress, I don't even know what. The actor-ish, or church, whatever.
Just call him actor.
Well, that person's non-binary, like, in real life, considered non-binary.
Yeah, well,
and
there's no non-binary, you know, term for actor or actress, so just actor.
Actor, whatever. Yeah. It's just, it was, and it, coming from someone who's not used to hearing or seeing that, I'm not really a part of that group, you know, I don't know really anyone who is non-binary or trans or whatever. So when Kolber and Stemmons were talking about them, it was weird because, you know, the them, they pronouns are always, you know, plural or in plurality. So it's just something.
First of all,
I get why Star Trek added it in there, and I'm glad it wasn't like a forced, like shove it down your throat kind of thing. It was built into the story somewhat nicely because you see her start to trust Stamens, that she opens up to him because he can kind of understand her a little bit. And, you know, the actor said that this is the first time they have opened up.
You'll get it right eventually.
It's going to take time because I'm not used to that they opened up to Stamens and told their pronouns to someone other than Gray, who was their boyfriend.
Okay.
So I mean, it wasn't. I mean, I don't like the PC-ness of Hollywood.
Right. Well,
I get inclusivity, and I'm all for inclusivity. And I think they handled it in a decent way. I mean, it wasn't forced. It was a nice, elegant scene. You did see some character development between them and Stamens. So,
first of all, there's
take some getting used to on my hand. So
there's no gender in the future. They're supposed to be your sir. It doesn't matter if you're a dude or a chick, you're called sir in the Federation, in Starfleet. I mean, Deanna Troi was called sir. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were a woman, you were called sir. It was just informal, yes sir, no sir. You know, there was no she. You know, that was the thing with Janeway, because even Janeway was like, I get it. We don't do gender. I don't like being called sir. I prefer either ma'am or captain. And they can go by it, and I'm like, yeah, it's fine. But...
And that's the thing, you know... I'm not familiar with the no genderness of the Star Trek history. I don't know how often they use pronouns.
Well, it's
never something that's really stuck out with me because, you know, when you're taught a certain way for 28-9 years or however long I've been around, you're just used to it. So now there's this new form, which is, you know, I won't say abnormal, but it's unfamiliar.
Well, it is abnormal. It's different from it's new.
It's different from the traditional norm. So
I mean,
it's what
non-binary. The concept of non-binary is a new concept within last decade. So I mean,
and for some people who aren't very associated with, not because you know you just don't know anyone who is that way. It takes some getting used to. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I mean. I would much rather them say their name, Adira, because then I won't get that. Oh, when they say they, they're, them, whatever. I just feel like they should be talking about multiple people when they're not.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it just has to do. Part of the reason why I don't like it is maybe it has to do with it's too familiar, or maybe the crew is just too familiar.
It hits too close.
There's no rank or structure. There is no chain of command or structured chain of command. Cause you know, in previous Star Treks, they were all friends, but they were colleagues as well, you know, to where here they kind of all seem like, oh, family, all, you know, goody two shoe. We do our own thing. You know, there's no real rank, structure, command. You know, it's not as tight lipped as the Enterprise or Voyager, you know, or even Deep Space Nine. You know, it's kind of a looser ran ship, and I'd rather them go more by rank and title and a little bit formality if they were going to do it rather than the they.
Well, the thing is, she's not a part of the crew technically, so there's no real you can't call her by her rank. That's why I was saying I think I would prefer if they just call her by or they by their name. That way it just causes a little less confusion. I know that sounds, people are going to be like, oh, well, you should just get used to the pronouns. Well,
no,
fuck off. I'll adjust how I adjust. I mean, it's like, I'm not going to bash them for being non-binary. They are who they are and it makes them happy, but you know, don't go out and try to, you know, shun me and hang me up on whatever to try to,
well,
to adjust at your pace. I'll adjust at my own fucking pace.
Star Trek.
Okay, I'm done ranting. Yeah. Let's wrap up this episode.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, Star Trek traditionally has always been very libertarian. It's, you know, you can do your own thing. You can do it. As long as it doesn't affect other people, as long as it doesn't bother other people, or as long as it's not affecting the rights and liberties of others, what you're going to do, do it. You know, and that's kind of always been my philosophy as well, you know. You know, I'm fine with it. You do you. You want to call yourself that? You want to do it? Fine. Just don't.
Yeah. Force don't patronize it. Yeah, me don't, for getting it wrong every now and then.
Right, and don't force other people to, you know, don't try and force other people into doing something they don't want to do.
Yeah, and that's when, you know, kind of said they handled it more elegantly when Adira was like, "This is not. I don't prefer to go by she, her. I prefer to go by these pronouns." And I was like, "Okay." There could have been a better way, but that was a good way.
Yeah.
And it could have been a hell of a lot worse. So that's kind of where I'll leave it. I think they handled it pretty well. If I were to rank how they handled it, I'd give it like a 6 or 6.5 out of 10. It was nice to see they develop with Stamens.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just going to take some getting used to.
Yeah. I don't know. This is the first that Star Trek's ever done non-binary. They've gone no gender before. gone genderless species before, but that's a whole other concept in itself.
Yeah.
So,
well, so it sounds like we're in agreement. Episode 6 was a lot, was better than episode 7.
You mean 7 and 8?
It was probably. Fuck. No.
Yes. Because we already covered 6. Damn it. We just didn't change. Yes. Yeah, it's 7 and 8. Okay.
So Unification 3 was a lot better than The Sanctuary. So 7, I think. Agreed. Episode 8, even though it was directed by Frakes and he tends to be a pretty good director, it just. And I think it was the worst episode of the series. And I was looking on IMDb. It is rated the worst episode of, not the series, but of season 3. I haven't looked at the whole series.
Yeah,
I mean, it was only rated like a 5 out of 10.
Yeah,
and that's kind of where I put it, if there, because it's just it was a very forgettable episode in my mind.
Oh yeah, agreed. I mean, it wasn't. That's why. I mean, I was rewatching it before we hopped on to. Oh shit. My chair just lowered. So I was rewatching it before we hopped on here, and then I'm like, you know, I wasn't even done watching it, but I'm like, okay, we can just go ahead and get started because honestly, I just don't feel like watching this episode anymore. I mean, it really wasn't. Both of them didn't really progress much of the plot or the storyline. It was kind of almost filler episodes. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it was like half filler. It was it took baby steps in the direction instead of taking full-grown or adult steps.
Yeah, but. And the only reason why 7 was even decent to begin with is because you get a lot of new information about stuff we've already seen in previous Star Trek lore, i.e., you know, Spock's reunification.
Spock.
I mean, that was literally the biggest. I think those were the two most watched episodes in Star Trek history when they aired. You know, So I mean, it's just they were big for Star Trek fans, and I think that they explained a lot of things with that storyline well. I like them to continue with it, but the rest of the episode, the underlying plot of the episode was, you know, meh. So,
yeah,
both of them were meh.
Yeah,
you know, I've lost a little bit of enthusiasm for season 3. I had a lot more before episode 7 and 8, but it's still, it's not bad. So we'll patience.
Yeah.
I hate to say patience. It. Yeah.
We'll see. Let's, we'll see how these last 5 episodes are.
Yeah, maybe these last 5 are great episodes and it'll knock it out of the park. And maybe we'll look forward to season 4, even though it's probably not likely.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill
it. Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
What do we got to look forward to for next week, really?
For next time on Deep Space High is actually episodes 9 and 10, entitled Terra Firma, Part 1 and 2. So that'll be episodes 9 and 10, which you can catch next time on Deep Space High.
Well, I guess that'll do it for this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next time as we continue our discussion of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag DeepSpaceHigh, hashtag TalkersInTrek. You can follow us on Instagram at DeepSpaceHighPod and on Facebook at DeepSpaceHigh Sci-Fi TV Reviews. Following either one of those pages will keep you up to date with.
And we also want to ask everyone, please leave a review on Apple Podcast and leave a 5-star rating while you're at it. It really helps with the show. It really helps, you know, get the show out there, get some new viewership, and keeps us expanding. We want to spread the word. We want to get more listeners. We want to hear what you guys have to think. You know, we'd love to hear what your opinions are, what you like, what you don't like, and we can get better. So, all right. Yeah. It's hard to get much worse.
Try to get better.
All right. Well, yeah, we can. All right.
We can try that
note, I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So.
And live long and prosper.
Or don't. I don't care.